You're listening to the Laugh Factory Podcast Network. For more shows, visit the podcast page at laughfactory.com.
It's the After Laugh, After Laugh. Welcome to the After Laugh, After Laugh, After Laugh. After Laugh, man. Go ahead, pull up a chair.
Hey, guys. Welcome to the After Laugh. Ooh, I like my voice right now. It's all scraggly. I have a very special guest.
Oh, thanks.
This is a very special guest. I have Kira Groves, who was my first... You were really my first high school girlfriend. That was my... That's how pathetic and nerdy I was.
Was I?
Yeah, you were my first... I mean, I had a girlfriend in ninth grade. And then like 10... I never really had a... I don't know. I never really had a girlfriend. Well, let me put it this way. I didn't have a sexual relationship until my senior year.
I didn't have sex with you. What are you talking about?
Isn't that pretty much all we did? That's all you do. I lost my virginity like right before my senior year in high school.
Wait a second. I think I remember who this person was because there was a picture of her. She had long black hair.
She was Mexican. A Mexican-German girl.
I don't know. She had long black hair with a black outfit and a little... It was like a prom dress, and you gave me her picture. I'm still not sure why.
I did?
You did.
What is that beeping?
Morning.
Okay. Yeah, you met her? I don't know if you
No. You just gave me a picture.
That's fascinating.
I'm wondering if that's who it was.
I don't know why I would have done that. Yeah, I was...
To profess your love for me, Bill.
So it'd be... We haven't... this will be fun. We'll be talking... I don't know if anyone has... talk to their high school sweetheart after 20 plus years, but so this is going to be very interesting. Kira came up in conversation with my parents the other day. Said, "How's Kira doing? They have a little knickknack that you gave my parents." Who, and I've talked about this on podcasts at first, and I, you know, you've seen my stand up.
I had a
joke where my dad at one point said, "You know, God separated the races for a reason." He denies it. He's like, "I never said that." I'm like, "Dad, it was the time." But they got, you know, and I think it was really cool because, and I don't fault them for it. They just had a very provincial life from their upbringing, which was an upbringing of just being white. Whiteness.
I just remember us sneaking.
Oh yeah, so Kira is. I mean, you're half black, but you're black.
I'm black.
You're black, right?
Yeah, I'm black.
You would never say I'm half black.
No, I mean, when people ask me what are you, I know what they're talking about, so I will clarify that I'm.
No, this came up recently with everything happening with the Asian community. Do you get offended when people say what are you?
No,
is that something that? Because I never thought. I'm sure I've asked that a bajillion times in my life. I never meant it with malintent, but you look at someone who's ethnically ambiguous and you're just curious what their heritage is, you know? And I don't think that's coming from a racist place. It's just more like a curious place. So, so people ask you, what are you? People probably think you're Latin.
Yeah. I don't get insulted. I could care less.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been asked by everybody, whether they're black or white. It doesn't matter.
So, let me give a little story. So when I met Kira, we were, in a class together.
Okay.
And we were I guess teaching or tutoring or mentoring mentally handicapped kids.
Yes.
Right?
I was about to ask you how you were going to say that because I don't know what's politically correct.
Well, yes, obviously. I think you can say mentally handicapped, I hope. But also, just in general, more than mentally handicapped, like there's just a lot of things going
on. Yes. You had to get recommended to be in the class.
We did.
You did. We had to have letters written from like.
But I remember sitting next to you, and I guess we were at a table, and I just remember going like, "This girl is so cool looking. You have these light hazel eyes." And I was just like pitter patter.
Okay, you know what? I don't know if you know this.
What?
Because I was telling somebody this story probably a month ago. It's funny that we've been talking about it. I was late for that class because I was always late for class. And I walked in, and the only seat available was across from you. And I was pissed.
Really? Why?
Oh, my God. You were like, I don't know if you remember. I didn't really hang out with white people.
Oh, yes, I do know that. You were a cheerleader. And the cheerleader.
And our cheerleaders, right? We're black. Right?
The cheerleaders at TC Williams. Yeah, they were black. And were there any white cheerleaders?
There
on the
was
team?
One. Her name was Denise. She was really, really heavy set. Like she was pretty heavy, but she was the only one that could do a flip.
She was the only one that could catch people. and I was like one of two white people on the football team. So it was kind of, we had the same.
We knew the same people, but had never met. So when I walked into that classroom and that was the only seat, I was like, can I curse?
Of course.
I was like, motherfucker, I got to sit by this.
Cracker.
I just knew you were a racist blonde. You were like the madman flash forward to me.
Really?
That's what you looked like. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
And I had to sit down. And the next thing we did those little art collage things to tell about ourselves. And I used to have those long fingernails. Do you remember this?
I remember you had, what was it called? Did you have your hair like flat ironed? What was it? Pressed.
I had an asymmetric kind of style. I think I had a K in the back of my head at one point. And one of my nails broke and you used it in your...
I'm so creative.
Art piece. You are.
Yeah, I don't know how I was able to trick you into dating me. How did
I can tell you that too.
Yeah, how'd that happen?
You gave me a note probably a week or two into class. And I opened it up and all it said was, how would you like to swap spit with a skinny little white boy?
I was skinny then. Wow.
And I looked back and I was like, did he write that to me? And I had to ask my friends. Now, granted, I had half my family's white, right?
Yeah.
But it never crossed my mind.
To ever be attracted to a white boy.
Never. And so I had to ask. I asked this girl, Tracy, and a couple of other people. I was like, is he cute? I could not tell if you were good looking.
That's so funny.
And she was like, yeah, he's okay.
He's all right, but white boy. So then what happened? What after that? I sent you the note, and then you were like...
Yeah, no, you asked me to go to the homecoming dance.
I did. God, I had a game.
You were a bold little mofo.
I was bold. Did we go to homecoming?
We did. I don't know.
I think I might have gone with the girl I lost my virginity to or something, maybe.
My gosh, I think that's true. Maybe that's why you gave me the picture to... It's all coming back.
But
I don't know.
After homecoming...
All I know is I put on your, what did they call it, a letter jacket?
Here, so you know how in high school, back in the day, your quote-unquote girlfriend would wear your letter, your varsity jacket. And we had these, T.C. Williams was a powerhouse football team. Not when I played, but right before that. So they had really nice, like these satin jackets.
Yes.
And I was like a three-letter varsity soccer, track, and football.
You were.
I was like, wear my jacket, Kira. And you'd wear it, and you'd put a jean jacket over it.
Oh, I don't remember that.
You were like, yeah, I'll wear it. And you'd always have a jean jacket. I'm like, you're kind of embarrassed to be wearing my jacket, to be honest.
A little bit.
And I'd never dated a black girl before either. So it was, for both of us, it was an interesting thing.
Well, what was it most interesting to me was that because... I mean, for people who are listening, in our town, it's kind of like our elementary schools. We had two different middle schools.
GW.
And Hammond.
And Hammond, yeah.
And I went to elementary school on one side of town, and then I moved to the other to go to Hammond.
Uh-huh.
So I kind of knew all the people who went to GW, your school, right?
Uh-huh.
And all the people who went to Hammond. I knew all the whites because I was in honor roll.
Uh-huh.
Classes. There were only a handful of us black people in those classes.
Yeah.
And when we started dating, that's the thing that struck me, because people were like, yo, you're dating Bill? And I couldn't believe that they even knew who you were.
Well, because I was on the football
team. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We were like the power couple.
I think I told you this too. So, and I was never the guy. First of all, I wasn't. I was one of those players I was just good enough not to be mocked. You know what I mean? I was just good enough. Like I would pull out plays during practice. I was just good enough to like get by with like, oh man, we really want to like haze this kid and torment. But I was just a little too good for that. Not great, but like good enough.
Yeah, you were good.
I was okay.
You were respected.
So so in the locker room, you know, everyone. Guys in the locker room, and like I said, I was one of
grab her by the
me and like one other white guy. I think the center was white. And they were talking about, I think your name came up because they were talking about all the girls.
I don't know. Maybe the
cheerleaders.
Oh, no.
And I was just like, I was always really quiet. At one point, I was like, so what would you say if I started dating Kira?
No, really?
Yeah. I said, Eddie, I forget his name, like Ricky Morrow, the QB, yeah, and Eddie. And Eddie was like, if you started dating Kira, man, I would bow to you. I'd be like, follow the leader. And he did this like bowing motion. I was like, okay. I was like, all right. And then we started dating, and it was public, and they never talked to me again.
Oh, no, I didn't know
they
that.
They just like ignored me.
They didn't ignore me.
They were just like, oh, because then they're like, okay, if she's dating this guy, she must be thirsty. So then they started just, they were like, I know you told me, like Ricky Morrow started trying to like get with you. Like, what's going on, girl? Like, let's hang out. They all just were like, she's got to be slumming right now. Let's get her to the good shit.
Well, I mean, dating you did kind of pull me out of my world, though.
Well, it was interesting because you were very your previous boyfriend was obviously it was a black guy that you were with for a while, right?
Yeah, for 3 years.
You had a lot more.
He was older. I dated him from my freshman year to junior year.
Yeah, freshman. And you were kind of like breaking up with him right when we met, I think.
No? Yeah, we had just broken up.
And I swooped in there.
You did. You did.
And then we would go over to your place, and your mom was pretty liberal.
Oh, okay.
I'm not saying anything.
No, just in case.
Well, I mean, you were my first sexual relationship. There's nothing bad. Well, we're adults. We could talk about that.
I didn't know if you were going to be specific.
I'm not going to
talk about, like the time you hung me up from the ceiling. I'm just kidding.
What are you talking about?
I know.
And you had more experience. And so it was definitely, you did. I had sex like one time. And you had a boyfriend for 3 years.
That's true.
So,
what if I never told my mom that, Billy?
Okay. Let's just, are you going to share this with your mom? You should.
I guess I will. You're an adult now. I'm just kidding. Yeah.
Your mom we'd go downstairs to your room. This happens in every high school. There's always like one parent who just doesn't check up. Like, we could do it in my house.
I got to tell you, yeah. If my mother...
What did she think we were doing in the basement?
She did not think we were having sex.
Get out of here.
She did not think we were
having
sex.
Are you sure about this, Kira?
I am positive.
It was all a study
date? I can't say that she... She didn't think that I was a good kid, Billy.
I know you're a good kid.
Yeah, but that's not something that...
Okay, first of all, you were close to your mom.
Very close.
You were on birth control. Your mom knew that, obviously. What did she... Was
okay,
just,
but
oh,
this
just
is
to
the
regulate
thing.
My periods.
Well, no, yeah, because...
Get out of here.
This is a whole other story. I do not want to get into it.
Get into
painful
it.
Painful and horrible.
I love painful and horrible. That's what this whole point of the podcast
it's painful
is.
Painful and horrible. When my mother found out I was having sex with the guy I was with for 3 years, it was bad.
You were with him for 3 years. What did she... you're in high school.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't think parents... Their little girl is having sex at 15.
I assume that your mom co-signed on our sexual relationship.
No, and she... The whole pill thing, she found out by accident. And I did make up some crazy lie to her.
I get really bad cramps, Mom.
Yeah, I did make up some crazy, crazy lie to her. And I, you know, did she know? Sure, in the back of her mind. But she believed her daughter. I was such a good kid. I don't think.
Yeah. It's really weird because I think about that time. And like, let's just be adults, be honest about this. It was... You, when you're that age, 17 years old, as a boy, and you're just flowing with testosterone, you're pretty relentless with that. It's like you could just kind of like, I do a bit about it. It's like, reload, reload.
Well, it worked.
I mean, it wasn't. I wasn't good at it, but.
Yeah, you
it was
were.
Just go al-
Can
I mean,
we talk about the first time?
Yeah, let's talk about... Oh, wow. I remember... Okay, the first time we had sex... Weren't we in a hotel room?
We were in this girl Christine's apartment. Or she's a high-rise.
Oh, okay. That's what it was.
And she she was having a little party, and we just snuck into her room. Before we finish the story, did we have sex in your house?
Maybe when my parents were gone in the rec room briefly.
Because that would have been difficult.
Maybe but we would do the thing that you would. I think things have changed now. People are a little bit more, parents a little bit more. They get it. They're maybe more permissive about, I don't know. But we would get in the car. I'd borrow my mom's car. And we would go to, there was like a park, like a little field that you could pull into that was kind of cordoned off. And that would be where we'd do it a lot.
Or my room.
Yeah, we were in your room
a lot.
But
there was a floor in between us. It was easy to get away with.
That's why I was like, your mom's got it. I'd be down there for like five. I'd come up with my hair tousled. We had 4 hours.
I want us to get back to the first time, but I do remember the first time we had sex in the rain, and there was a puddle. We were outside, and you were trying. I don't know if you were trying to have that romantic thing where you like dunk the woman's hair in the puddle, and then she comes up wet and sexy, and my hair is big and curly, and it would not do what you wanted it to do. So you're like splashing hair on
in a puddle?
Water in my. I don't know. It was in the rain. In the back.
I'm sure we
somewhere.
I mean, I don't remember everything, but I do remember that there was a lot of outdoor sex was going on, probably.
We were sneaking into people's homes.
Yeah.
Their parents would be out of town. You'd find out, and we would drive and sneak in. We'd find, like, a rug so that we wouldn't go in their beds. You don't remember this?
And I do remember that.
One of the parents came home once. We had to sneak out of the window.
Oh, it was Scott Lever's parent house. I remember that because I was like, house, or I forget what it was. I didn't break in. I was given permission to stay there or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
But it was still kind of breaking in out the parents. The kids knew. Our friends knew.
No, sorry, because I look back at that and I go, it was nice to have a sexual relationship consistently with someone at that age. Yeah. But I don't know how good it is for your psyche, because it's pretty consuming and you don't know what it means emotionally, and it's just a lot. It's a lot of power to wield at that age. You know what I mean?
No.
No?
No.
Maybe not for you.
It was fun.
Because I was just like, yeah, but I was just, I think it like messed up with my head because I would get really jealous of you.
Oh, yeah.
Like
that's
Lou
true.
Robles and different people would.
Who did hit on me.
Oh, I know he did.
Once college started, and then he went and told you that I hit on him.
Yeah.
And I was like, these motherfuckers.
Well, you were always very flirtatious. And you know how guys are. They're so stupid. They're like, if you talk to a guy and smile, they're like, you want to fuck me, bro. You know, so he was convinced you wanted to fuck him like the whole time we were dating.
Ugh. I mean, sorry. Not ugh.
He's a good looking guy. I mean,
yeah, he was, but you know. Anyway, the first time it took you about 30 seconds and you were so
apologetic. That's generous. But then the weird thing about that is there's a thing. God, this is like so detailed, but there's a thing that happens when you're that age, which is like, yeah, you come really soon. And then you just stay in there. And then you get hard again.
Well, that didn't happen that time. But
not that
whatever
time.
You want to
I remember,
remember.
I was like, I'm never going to have sex again. I was so embarrassed. And I think
you were,
went,
but you said...
I think
said,
you went...
no, you...
No, I, you like rolled... You literally rolled your eyes and went... And I was like, oh my God, I'm so mortified. But then we did it again that night.
We did.
And I think that lasted for a minute and a half, not to brag.
Okay, before we get off of the sex topic...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you knew this, because the only time I remember is in college. Do you remember me ever being resistant to having sex with you? There would be times where I would all the time and then wouldn't.
Yeah.
Do you know why that is?
I'm assuming your period? I don't know.
No.
You had herpes. Got it.
Shut up. No, I had, and still do, I guess, but dermatillomania.
I have no idea what that means.
Do you know what trichotillomania is?
No.
So trichotillomania is when people... obsessively pull their hair out.
Oh, you'd like pluck your eyebrows and shit.
And
right?
Dermatillomania is picking.
Yeah, you
and
pick.
I would pick parts of my body that I would be embarrassed for you to see. And so I think that probably added to some of your confusion, because we'd be at it like bunnies one minute and the next I just wouldn't let you touch me because I knew I had to heal.
That's the thing about that's the thing about women in general. Like women will... they'll have something physically going on that they feel uncomfortable about, and they don't feel comfortable telling guys. I'm not blaming the women, because maybe men present themselves in such a way that women don't feel comfortable. I mean, looking back, I kind of, you know, if you told me, look, I have like ingrown, whatever the hell it is, or dermatological, blah, 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 I'd have been like, does it still work? I wouldn't care. Like,
and I believe that.
I wouldn't be like, oh my gosh, I can't.
100%. The one thing I knew then was that you were nuts about me.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it was mutual.
My whole senior. And then we did the thing where we tried to kind of keep it going freshman year in college, which if I was ever talking to a kid and they go to different college, you were at William & Mary, I was at Princeton. Don't do it.
That was a mess. Yeah.
Just don't do it. It's just too, you're still figuring out who you are and what you want. And even if you care about someone, it's just like too, you don't want to hurt someone. And it's almost impossible not to start engaging in lies and different things. And it's not like, I don't know if I got laid my freshman year at Princeton.
I have no
idea. Maybe one person or something, but
I think you did.
But it wasn't a lot. It was like maybe one person.
You would tell me, though, if you were dating. I don't think I would tell you if I was dating, because I always believed it's different if a guy knows.
Because guys will go crazy.
Yeah. But you were...
So I don't know how it if it ended with, like, screaming and fighting, or it just kind of fizzled out.
No, from what I remember, like every summer, we'd be back, we would hook up again.
Yeah, Christmas.
It was kind of like, no matter who else we were seeing, we would hang out, like, yeah. Bill and Kira.
And when did that end?
You know, you came to California the first time after I had moved out.
Oh, which is funny, because I remember I had Viagra, and I was like, let's just try it for scientific purposes.
But I wouldn't have sex with you because that's the only time, because I was dating somebody seriously.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I will say, when you came, because we did kiss,
mm-hmm.
we made out a little bit, and I was like, oh, no, I still have feelings for him, which wasn't good for the relationship.
It never is. Yeah.
But, I mean, it's okay. I mean, we wound up breaking up anyway, but can I just backtrack to part about...
Me being a premature ejaculator? Sure.
No. One thing you did say to me, it wasn't about dermatillomania, but I had my little mustache, and I had...
oh no, Bill. What did you do?
I had dyed it. Like, tried to make it lighter. And you were teasing me, and you were like...
What did I say?
You told me I looked like I had mustard on my face. You kept calling me Mustard Mama or whatever.
Oh my God, what an
asshole. I was horrified. I mean, it was funny.
Yeah.
You know, but I was like, oh, no.
Okay, here's something we did. And by the way, my parents are definitely going to listen to this podcast.
No.
Of course they will.
Turn it off right now.
No, they're going to listen to it. Because here's the thing about, you forget about parents, because you think your parents are provincial and they are oblivious. They know. I think if you were to talk to your mom, Barbara, and you would say, Mom, you know me and Bill were... Your mom would be like,
oh, of course I know that.
She knew. Like, my parents knew it, too.
But I don't think they admit it. We don't talk about it.
Because I would do things like, this is how bad it was. Like, I'd be at your place, and we'd be, like, hooking up, and it was, like, my curfew, like, 10 p.m. or whatever it was.
I remember 11 the curfew. PM.
And then I would, and you lived, like, 10 minutes away from me, right?
Yeah.
And I would say... I was driving home. I was too tired. So I pulled over and took a nap. my mom's like, okay. And then years later, she's like, do you think I actually believe that shit that you pulled over on a 10-minute
See, and it's the same thing for my mom.
Drop.
I'm sure I was telling her, we're studying. You were like the valedictorian. I needed your help.
Oh my God. It's so fucking funny.
Do you remember there was a time you called me and I had answered the phone and I was like, hello, Bill. Hello. I can't do it as low as I did back then, but you really thought it was a guy. Do you remember that?
I don't remember it. I tend to block bad things out of my brain.
You came back to my house so fast, and you were outside my window, and you were like, Kira! And I was like, what? I couldn't stop laughing, which just got you angrier.
Oh,
you were like,
God.
Who is there? I was like, Bill, I swear it was me. I said, hello, Bill.
Were you, now you were our funny. Senior year, and obviously it doesn't matter now, did you ever hook up with anyone else our senior year? Did you ever go back to your ex-boyfriend, Mike? Did you ever have a moment?
Oh, God, no.
Okay. I know I didn't.
No, I mean, we were,
Yeah.
I mean, we were together all the time. There was only one person that I knew had a crush on you, but I didn't think for 1 minute you would hook up with her. Can we say names?
Of course.
Is it Susan? Susan Ulrich?
Susanna Ulrich. Yeah, she was the first girl I dated when I was like seventh grade.
Yeah, that was the only person that I would hear like, oh, she likes him. Or would blatantly flirt.
What's weird about this is like, I think she lives out in Pasadena. There are all these people that kind of are in the LA area. And you always think like maybe you'll bump it. And then like years go by and then just you never friggin' see him.
Yeah.
And like Palana, our mutual friend Palana Tiller, who's also sort of the inverse of you, a white dad.
Father.
Let's call him a colonizer. And a mom.
Which, by the way, I'm not going to say his name because
Africa.
I do not want to
what
embarrass him. One of your friends, Caucasian, came up to me one day and he was like, yo, Kira. And I was like, yeah. He's like, so, you know how Palana's father is white and her mom is black and your mom is white and your dad is black? I was like, yeah. No, we're seniors in high school.
Yeah.
And he's like, so if her father had sex with your mother, would the black
what
be in your mom and they could have a black baby? And I was like, I can't.
He literally used the word cooties.
From what I remember, I could have. I don't think he knew what to say. And it wasn't in this like.
It's just a dumb person. This had to be a dumb. I mean, there's naive and then there's just you're dumb.
I thought he was smart until he asked me that question. But I would get dumb questions like that. Like,
yeah.
What happens to black people in the sun? Like, what? I don't, like, we wrinkle like California raisins. What do you mean? We get burned in the sun or tan. Like, I would get asked a lot of dumb questions.
Yeah. Well, people, I know that there was a whole thing too. It's racist to want to touch a black girl's hair.
Never bothered me.
And some of that stuff is like, you're just people and you're curious about someone who looks different than you. It's not like, let me imprint my white supremacy on this person by touching their. It's just kind of like, I'm very curious what a afro feels like. Let me touch your hair. It looks so cool. Like when you had your hair, at one point you had like the natural, and I was like, boom. It just was like, in the curls, you just wanted to grab it and touch it.
Yeah,
cool.
But white people weren't the only. Look, listen, being biracial and having this curly textured hair was different in both.
Yeah.
On both teams, right? And so I would have my sisters and my brothers being like, yo, girl, what is this hair? And they'd be, you know, they put their hands in it. So I never really. And then white people would be like, oh my gosh, your hair.
Yeah.
Everyone
wanted to touch it.
Yeah, so I just never even associated it with a white person thing. It was just people just touched my hair because it was bigger and different. And I used to press it all the time because it wasn't as cool to have big curly hair. Now
it's great.
The bigger the better.
Yeah.
So when I did wear it curly, it was like, whoa.
Yeah. It's really interesting. I mean, just like everything around like a black girl's hair is just really fascinating. There was a viral video about a white dad who had like a single dad who had a biracial daughter with like a, you know, and it was a whole video about him taking a class and learning how to like braid her hair and take care of her hair. And it was like a really cool, sweet video of this dad's like, I have no idea what I'm doing. Let me take this class to figure out how to like,
that
braid my
cute
girl's hair. It was very cute.
My mom didn't. I stayed home once because my mom, I was having a wild hair day, and she put a little, this is in middle school, she put a little, what do you call those little?
Bow?
It wasn't a bow. It was just a little beret or barrette in the front, and it was all big, and I was like, I can't go to school like this. And
now, one of the things I want to talk to you about, because obviously, like, race is like, it's always been a big issue in America, and now it's front and center. And
sure.
So in your position, you're uniquely suited to have a perspective on it because you've been sort of thoroughly entrenched in both cultures.
Yes.
You know, I know that Palana, our friend Palana, who's also like you, very beautiful girl. She she grew up in the honor roll. She went to, like, it was in the ATP classes, the weight classes. There was a point where she went to UVA, which is, I mean, let's be honest, it's like the hotbed of fucking racism, white supremacy. If you go there, it's just kind of like, so she had to make a conscious decision to sort of align with the black community there, because I think it just felt, being in that world, inauthentic and weird to her. And she's a very smart girl. So there was a time when she, I don't think she became militant, but she became, it was almost like she sort of wouldn't talk to me and a lot of her white friends anymore. And
I don't remember that phase because I'm black, and so we were still talking.
Yeah, of course. But did you ever, were you ever in a point where you felt like you had to make the choice in terms of, like, what culture to embrace? Or did you feel comfortably going between the two?
No, I was fine with both. I mean, there are things, it's funny because I hear people who don't get it. They don't get systemic racism or anything. But the class that we met in, for example,
yeah.
And then I'll go back to your question. Those two teachers, I don't remember, I don't know if you remember this, but they, besides having our class, which was like a 2-hour class, like, you really did have to get recommendations to teach those younger kids.
Mm-hmm.
And they also had, in our schools, we had what was called phase one, phase two, phase three, and phase four classes, and phase four was honors. That's just for people listening. And the phase one classes were like LD.
Yeah.
Lowered, or learning disabled.
Disabled, yeah.
And a lot of my friends were in phase one and phase two classes. And those, the two teachers that we had, had phase one, phase two classes. And a lot of the friends that I had were in them. And I remember us walking into the classroom and kids that I knew, I'm going to make up names because I'm not saying any names.
Sure.
But like Kim and Trevor and, you know.
Yeah.
Lolo, whatever. We walk in and their spelling papers were on the walls. And do you remember those little stickers with the worm on them, like, good job?
No.
They had these stickers that they put on their papers with big red letters like A and F or A minus. And I stayed after class to talk to them. I was so insulted because, to me, those papers, they were treating them like kindergartners. Like, we were fucking seniors. Are you fucking kidding me? You're putting big stickers and A's on there. I just hated the level that other people saw my friends, who I knew were really smart.
Yeah, of course.
But didn't have the same... It was just frustrating. Like, in camp, they just didn't have the same access to tutors and all those other things.
Yeah, of course.
And even swimming. We would go swimming and... a lot of my black friends would be on the shallow end, and I'd be swimming.
Yeah.
Because I had pools. We were always in neighborhoods that had pools where I was able to learn how to swim.
Yeah.
I mean, we had the YMCA, but there wasn't... You know, you just had different... Even restaurants weren't in black, poor neighborhoods. They had McDonald's.
Yeah.
There was just a different way of being brought up. And so, anyway...
Yeah, I mean, Virginia was like a weird collision of the rubber met the road a lot of times. Like, I think, was it miscegenation? Miscegenation is that when, like, blacks and whites would marry. That was illegal until, like, 1976, which was, like, not that...
May have been a little before that. I thought it was, like, 69 or 70.
I think there was a story of the Loves. It was, like, a white man. There was a movie about it, and black women. And it was...
I
forget
think
how
that was
recently.
69. It was still recent.
This is why, you know, a couple things I always, when I have this discussion, I try to remind people, like, yeah, as bad as things are, it is definitely getting better or has gotten better. You know what I mean? Like, our relationship in high school was crazy to everyone. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was, like, people were like, that's weird. You're within your, like, that didn't, it didn't,
you may have,
there wasn't a lot of
that.
There wasn't a lot of interracial relationships in our high school. There just weren't. And particularly for kids that were semi-popular like us, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's funny, within our school, I didn't much think about it. I know that there were times where we'd be out in the public and I'd be very aware that I was with a white guy and I'd be embarrassed.
I would never
think
about it.
But I wouldn't tell you that.
That's interesting. Cause I'd never cross. I was like, I'm with a hot, tall, hot girl. You know, that's all I would think. Like, look what I got. But I think I told you this. My parents, who And look, my parents, you know my mom and dad.
Yeah.
Fucking,
oh my God, Mrs. Dawes, please make goulash. I need you to pick up. I need you to make me goulash.
They're the best. But and they were kind of, you know, when we first started dating, understandably, because they're entrenched in these old ideas, they just had ideas like, oh my God. Because also when we're dating in high school, they think, well, that means you're going to get married and have kids. Because that's what
silly
you did.
Parents.
So then they have the, oh, they're going to have like a biracial baby. And in their head, and it is definitely sort of a subconscious form of racism, whatever, they go, wow, this kid is going to be confused. And I don't know that. I'm just worried about that. I'm worried if they have kids. Like, that was something that came up. Like, I'm just worried about
never told me that.
Yeah, and I was, and I was like, "What? You're worried that we're going to have a child with the broadest genetic gene pool, and we'll probably be an amazing athlete and great looking." You know what I mean? I mean, there's Ian Edwards has this great joke about like you can have like the ugliest parents in the world of different races, and they will have the most beautiful child. You can have like Precious and Smeagol, and they'll be like. They'll have a 10.
Your mother called me. Who did you date? You dated this woman who you were in a play with. Who you had told me at first.
LaLanya.
I am not attracted to her. LaLanya.
Yeah.
And then you guys started dating.
Yeah.
And you were open about it. I was like, that's fine because I'll get you when you come back home. And your mother called me because I guess she had taken the train home with you and stayed over before she went to her home. Uh-huh. Your mother calls me and she's like, Kira? And I'm like, yeah. She's like, do you ever think you and Bill will get back together?
That's so
Which was
funny.
Mind-blowing to me because I'm like, Mrs. Dawes? Is this you? I mean, I knew she liked me, but I was aware that there were... It took them a while to get used to me, right? But I never thought that she would want us back together.
And my parents always thought that you were pretty. Now, LaLanya, who I thought was very pretty, LaLanya had, for lack of a better word, she had very black features.
Yes, and that's why I was like, wait a minute. I was like, poor Mrs. Dawes thinks that like...
So LaLanya showed for dinner, you know, with her giant eyes and square and like big lips and just like, just
she
everything
did.
Was
She's
a very,
very full, full
very
featured
full,
woman, yeah.
You know, and my dad with his little beady eyes, little thin lips, like looking at her dinner like, who is this? They were just, and it's just, you know, it's just like any form of racism is just is ignorance. You know, it's more ignorance than hatred.
Absolutely. So listen, your parents are lovely.
They have great souls. So when you started coming to like my games, and they would take you to like a soccer game,
right,
or a football game, and I don't know if I told you this, I think I did, but they would take you to the game, and all the white parents would just like kind of look and just give them these judgmental looks, and they got really protective of you.
Aww.
And they started like, why are they these pieces of shit? And it made them kind of have to deal
Jump
with their
shit,
own
right.
their own bias, and they're kind of like, oh shit, like they're looking at me the way that I with feelings that I might have had in the beginning of their relationship,
right.
And it kind of really changed them. And I think that, you know, and I always think that like. And that's one thing that bums me out about everything going on right now is like, I think most people are good and most people
yes.
are going to try to overcome their bias. And if they have it, they're willing to overcome it. I mean, I travel all over the world and I go to the South and little redneck towns. It's very rare that you find people that are out and out racist. I know that's not really the issue. We're talking about like more unconscious and systemic racism, but you'll find like serious rednecks with like black best friends or black wives and like who don't really think about it because it's about their community and this person's in their community. Do you know what I mean? And I think it's just changed over the years.
I mean, look, everything changes over the years. And one of the things I learned at a very, very, very young age, I think I must have been 5 or 6. I was watching a TV show that had like skinheads on it.
Yeah.
Because my babysitters let me watch anything. No, really. Like, they were hideous. Abominable snowman so that I wouldn't sleep. But they had these racist guys on, these Nazi guys. And there was a birthday party for yeah. a kid that was about my age, or who was about my age, 5 or 6. And they had the swastika on the cake. And he had to blow out the little candles. And I was like, I knew as a little kid, I was like, oh, he's taught that.
Yeah.
Like,
of course.
I knew then
Yeah.
That you're taught these things, and like he was the same as me. Yeah. But they were going to teach him how to hate.
Yeah, for sure.
And so I think I've always had compassion for people who don't see outside of their own myopic views.
Yeah.
And it really is about exposure of meeting people.
Absolutely.
Of like you dating somebody who is of a different race. And
yeah. And it's been an interesting thing in my life, because I know that when I went to Princeton, and I think I told you this, because I was like, you know, was a break dancer when I was like younger.
Yeah.
And we battled the GW Breakers in ninth grade. Anyway, I'd go to Chuck E. Cheese for teen night, all that shit. So when I got to Princeton, and I, you know, my family was never wealthy. So I had like, and I was kind of dressed, like you kind of maybe sort of got less ensconced in black culture, and I was kind of trying to get more. And so when I got to, when I got to Princeton, people were like, this guy's a wannabe. Like he's like a, like the term was wigger. Right. Because I was like in a hip hop dance group.
Right.
And I was like, which is weird, because I never really thought that I was culturally appropriating or that I was trying to be black. I just kind of,
you're the farthest
I just
thing
like the dancing.
That.
And I like,
yeah,
like the style, like the baggy jeans and stuff. And a lot of these people at Princeton, like they didn't grow up with black people. They didn't go to black schools. They didn't like have black boyfriends or girlfriends. But if I would ever make a joke, like a black joke, that when I was in T.C. Williams and I would see like black girls and I would go like, oh shit, Shakisha, get him off. They would laugh hysterically when I would do like the neck roll, because like, this white boy's stupid. And it was always the best feeling when you made a group of black girls laugh by doing something stupid, right? And is that right? Whatever it is, stereotypes or not, but I never got the feeling that black people, this is before I did stand up, ever were offended when you were trying to be funny, even if you were embracing stereotypes or talking about stereotypes, because they knew where it came from.
Yeah, I mean, people know other people's intentions. That's
but the thing is, at Princeton, if you do it, if I would say a joke, whatever, and nothing terrible, and I wouldn't use the N-word or anything, but just some sort of like stereotype joke, they'd be like, how dare you? You racist people. And I'm going, you don't even know a black, what are you talking about?
Right.
Like, and not like, oh, I have, here's my card, I can say it, but there's, and I think it's kind of going on now with a lot of these like Karens, that they're really not involved in the world at all, in any black community. They have no reference. They have no connection to it other than this intellectual and moral connection that they have to protect this disenfranchised community. And they do it in this very sort of condescending way that isn't really connected to. So, for example, if I nowadays I'll go into a show with, you know, all sorts of different people, mixed people, and if there are no black people in the show, I won't do any jokes about black people, obviously. But if there's a group, I'll do it, because they will 99% of the time love it. But you'll see white people go, I can't believe he is saying this. Oh my God. And they'll like look around, and I'm and so I was like, well, look at the black table laughing, you uptight twat. What do you, what's up?
Why you gotta call a woman a twat?
That's such a great word. Good
no,
point,
it is.
Though.
It is.
So, and then we started doing urban shows, so urban stand-up shows. It was just one of those things. Like, I just always felt comfortable in that crowd, because I felt it was a crowd that was very open and free and appreciated humor and the effort for humor, as long as you're being authentic and having fun. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, listen, you were a sensitive people. White people.
Where's...
You are sensitive people.
Yeah.
And
it's just weird, because I feel like it's sort of, I don't know how things are going to be after the pandemic and after this past year in LA anymore with comedy, really. Like, in terms of, I've sort of stayed away from jokes that involve race these days, just because I don't know, I don't want to make anyone feel bad, and I don't want to get hashtag canceled. But it was part of the fun of doing Chocolate Sundays and urban shows, is being the white guy who would do breakdancing jokes and imitate black women and do this stuff. It was And now that just feels sort of like antiquated in the comedy world, which is fine.
Listen, I did a stand-up very shortly.
You did?
Yeah, because my...
How come you never told me?
I'll send you the video because I'm kind of funny.
You're very funny.
I'm kind of funny, but not just talking to people. But the woman who was my neighbor was teaching a comedy class, and she asked me to take her class. And I was like, oh, I'd love to.
This is L.A.?
Yeah.
Who's your neighbor?
Her name's Jude.
Jude, okay.
Judith Shelton. And okay. She... One of the things she said to me is because I had said something like a Mexican joke, and she's like, you can't do any Mexican jokes. Which, of course, I did it. Of course I did it now, because you just told me not to. But I've never... I got an email from somebody. I mean, when I did the actual show, it was not a big deal. But I kind of did this thing called Hump Day Dose on YouTube. This was years ago before... Not before people were really doing YouTube, but I kind of did my stand-up, like, each bit as, like, a little YouTube video. And I got this email from somebody who knew me who was just so offended. A white guy.
Yeah.
About, I'll never work in this town because I did the Mexican joke. And I was like, first of all, whoa. Really? Did you just say that to me? Like, anybody in this town cares about Mexicans or blacks or, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'm not going to work in this town for that. Yeah. But it was very eye-opening for me. I mean, people just cannot handle it. That's because that's your shit and it's in your head and you believe it. I'm joking about it because there's nothing that's attached to it.
There's
get
no
stereotypes.
Malintent.
I'm yeah. black. That's what I've heard my whole life.
Yeah.
For you, I don't know, but it's triggering something in you. So you need to figure you out that you can't deal with
exactly
a joke.
Yeah. And that's where it gets really delicate, because at the end of the day, we are talking about triggers. Like, everyone has their triggers. And triggers are based on fears and insecurities that people have. So if you have insecurity about your place in the black community writ large or black culture writ large, you definitely want to be on the right side of history. So anything that looks like it even could potentially... denigrating to any disenfranchised community, you can't align with that. Now, meanwhile, if I'm in, and I think I mentioned this last podcast, I was just in San Antonio, which has a very large Mexican population. And I did a joke. It was like an old joke I hadn't done in a long time. It was one of those jokes I felt like maybe it was quote unquote hacky. I should retire it. It was a joke about dating tall girls who wear heels and they would state their height in heels. I'm 6'2 in heels. I'm like, you can do that? Well, hell, I'm 7'8 on a unicycle. My penis is 12 inches long. If you start from the butt crack, you work your way up and count the overhang on the condom. And then I go, I'm just kidding. I don't wear condoms. I pull out like a grown-up. Gets a bit of a laugh. And then I go, hold on. I'm in San Antonio. There's a room full of Mexicans. Let me explain what pulling out is. Now, and it gets a big laugh, number one. But then there's like the laugh and the... Then the post laugh kind of like
now that's now
sound
or it was always like that.
Now it happened right, and even before a little okay. bit, but I think now it's more pronounced now because people are much more. It's much more on the surface. But after the show, every Mexican came up and was like, "Dude, that's so fucking funny, man! I got 5 kids, bro. It's so true." And they loved it. They didn't feel that it was insulting them in a way that was...
I mean, it's a comedy show.
It's a comedy show. And B, saying that Mexicans have a lot of kids, I don't know how that's necessarily super racist. Like, can you, if something is statistically accurate in a way, it's like saying Jews have a lot of kids.
Whether you think it's racist or not, we know that it's a stereotype that's out there.
Yes.
And so it's just kind of how I see it is you grab at these stereotypes and you enhance them and you twist them and you make them funny.
Yeah.
So and people get it and they relate to it because we all know it.
Yeah. Now, what was your Mexican joke that you did? Do you remember the joke that you did that got this person
offended? Isn't that going to sound funny now? But I go through this whole thing about how, because I used to smoke. I haven't smoked for seven and a half years.
Cigarettes.
I've been smober for 7.5 years.
Nice.
Yay for me. But I'd go through the whole thing of my smoking because it was like a 5-minute
How much did you smoke a day? I didn't remember that.
Oh, I got up to 2 packs of
Holy shit.
Yeah. I'll send you the video and you can see it. But at the end of it, all the trauma that I take the whole audience through of my smoking, I stand there and I'm like, well, I'd rather be a smoker than a Mexican. That was it.
That was it.
Just, and I think I said it in a way like, I'd rather be a smoker than a Mexican. I don't know. But it was funny. It just kind of went with it. Like, if I could be anything but a smoker.
And you're also, you're talking about a world, a system, and a society that doesn't give a lot of respect to Mexicans. You're not necessarily talking about genetically, you would not want to be a Mexican.
No,
you're talking about like living as a Mexican, like.
No, I don't even know what I was talking about.
It's just an easy joke.
That
it's right there.
She told me not to do one, and I was like, fuck you, I'm doing it. And so what's the one thing that would bother that particular teacher the most is if I said I didn't want to be one. It just kind of went with the mood, and it fell. And the one person that got upset when I did it via the hump day dose thing was white.
Yeah.
But... Look, I sound like the white person. I have Mexican friends, but it's true. Like your friends are your friends. You laugh and you joke with each other all the time.
It's always the white people who get offended at the jokes about minorities. It's never the minorities. It's very rare in my life that I've had I've done jokes and I've had people of whatever minority I'm joking about approach me and go, "Dude, that was fucked up."
Well, I mean, look, if I had feelings against any race.
Yeah, I think people can
Mexicans
tell too.
I was just like, I don't have any, there's just nothing within me. I don't know. People are people. We're all up for grabs in a sense. So I'm coming at it from an angle of like, what can I joke on about you and you and you and, oh my God, your purple hair. You know, and race comes in there too. Intention.
And I also think that there's something about, because we live in a world where we're mostly in our heads and we're not expressing ourselves all the time other than like the social media, we either witness stereotypes come to fruition, you know, we see the stereotype in action, we read about it, we hear about it, we know about it, and if you don't express it, it kind of like sits there. It almost has more power. In a weird way. So sometimes a joke about a stereotype is a good way to kind of not dismantle the stereotype, but highlight the stereotype as just that, as a silly stereotype that it's true at times. If you make a joke about black people being late, it's kind of like, are all black people late? Of course not. Are a lot of them late? Of course they are.
Yeah, but we call it CPT.
CPT, of course. But if a white guy jokes about it, then all of a sudden it's an issue. But black people wouldn't care if I made a joke about that. But a white woman might be, that's so racist.
I don't know. I mean, I did get called on some shit once. But it taught me to be aware in a way that I wasn't before, because I really don't have thoughts about certain races. Give me a race, any race, because I'm not going to use the one that I use. Just throw one out at me.
Middle Eastern. I don't know.
Okay, so I have a friend who's Middle Eastern, right? And the friend was telling me they were in line at the Middle Eastern clinic. And I was like, fuck the Middle Easterns. Just come hang with me.
Yeah.
Well, this was back in Facebook days.
Yeah.
When I had gotten back, logged onto Facebook, there was that particular thread had to have like 60 something messages, and it was all angry, and I was like, oh my God, what happened?
Yeah.
And by the time I got to the end of it, I realized they were all talking about me.
Oh wow.
And how racist this person was, because I said, fuck the, what race is this again? Middle Easterners. Whatever.
Yeah.
And it put me in check, because I didn't mean like fuck their race. Like it was just because that's where he was. He could have said I was in a pizza shop and I would have said fuck the pizza.
Yes.
I didn't think.
Of course.
But I understand how it was perceived. And I really had to, I had to check myself. And I wrote this whole thing. But it was really hard to explain that.
Yeah.
Without people thinking that I had single-handedly, you know, it's a word I'm looking for that I can't.
Targeted.
Targeted.
Yeah.
That particular.
I think it's good for people to obviously be sensitive, and to anytime you're joking about any disenfranchised community, whether it's like the trans community, the gay community, whatever it is, just have some sense of care and compassion and self-deprecation from your point of view around it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But it made me, that showed me the power of social media before.
That's crazy.
Things were really happening, and people would, you know, lose their careers over stuff they were saying.
They still are. I mean, I if I ever got really famous, I'm sure there's a tweet somewhere back there that someone could be like, look at this tweet. Now, I don't necessarily stand, I stand behind my right to have tweeted something that engaged in stereotypical thinking as a joke. I don't know if I would apologize about a tweet I had. Like that video I have, the N-word video, how a white man says N-word to a black man, which got like super viral.
That
I don't
bit.
Know if you saw that.
I've saw that bit.
I've had people say, you can't, you're gonna get canceled with that bit. And I'm just like, there's no world in which I'm going to apologize about making that video with a...
You did it with a black...
With a black production company, yeah. On a black show with black actors.
With black actors, yeah. No, I mean, that
gonna,
was the whole point.
I'm not
going
to do... You know, that's silly to think, like, I can't believe I engaged in that. It's like... And people were offended, but you know what? That's not bad, being offended. Being offended makes you have to deal with shit. And that's,
no, I remember that. It was kind of taking the circumstances of something and making... I mean, it was funny.
If you haven't seen it, Google how a white man says the N-word to a black man. It's... I think it's funny.
I thought it was funny too, Bill.
Thank you, darling.
Anyway.
Listen, Kira, I would love to have you longer. There, I have another person coming in now.
Fuck the other person. Oh my God, other people are going to get offended. Anybody? Are there? Oh my God.
What?
Nothing.
No one's going to get offended.
What if there are others? Is others a pronoun?
I don't know. Oh, don't even joke about pronouns. I don't even fuck with pronouns. I would never misgender someone. That is like...
Well, why would you go and do that?
Yeah, because that's just deliberately you're being... I'm making a point about what I believe about biology. It's like, shut up. Just be nice.
Listen, I don't determine whoever wants to be whatever, but I still could have insulted somebody.
Yeah.
By saying...
Yeah, of course.
Listen, were you about to like make me feel nervous about joking about the other person coming? You know.
No, not at all. I would love to have you longer. But I want you back. We're neighbors, right? You're just down the street.
Whatever. If your mom makes me goulash, I'll hang with you.
We're definitely going to go down there and
Mrs.
hang
Dawes,
out.
Please make me goulash.
Oh, really? That would be so fun.
Mr. Dawes, you too. Your
and they're both vaccinated, so we're going to do it soon.
And I'm getting mine on the 5th.
Now, Kira, where can people like... Are you
I'm off
YouTube
of social media.
You're off social media?
Yeah.
Congratulations.
When COVID started. I'm going to jump back on, but I'm going to jump back on with a purpose.
Yeah.
And I don't know what that purpose is yet.
But I've definitely referenced you several times on this podcast, so people who listen to a lot will be like, oh my God, this is Bill's high school. He wasn't lying. He's cool. He was dating a hot black girl.
Oh, thanks. Wait, hot, smart?
Hot.
Mm-hmm. Ah!
Yeah. Funny. A little racist black girl, maybe.
A little bit. Thank you.
Right.
I'm glad you had me on.
Thank you so much. And we'll talk soon. Kira Groves, everyone. Bye-bye.